Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, that was a little too easy last night for the Denver Nuggets as they win game one, 104-93. That was really easy. Very, very effortless by the Nuggets last night. Now, whenever we get a game and we have to dissect it, I think the first thing you always start with is, all right, the team that lost, how did they lose? How much of it was self-inflicted and how much of it was the other team? So the Miami Heat, this was a game that went back and forth early. And then in about a couple minutes into the first quarter, Denver took a lead and then never gave it up again. And the Miami Heat didn't shoot very well. They didn't shoot their outside shots at all. I mean, their three-point shooting was they were 13 for 39. And six of the three-pointers that they made came in a fourth quarter where we were just wrapping it up. So they did not hit outside shots. They did not attack the rim. They only shot two free throws in the game. And Nikola Jokic, is he toying with the Miami Heat? Because he didn't take his first shot in the game until the first quarter, until 3 seconds left in the first quarter. This is the best passing big man in the game. He might be the best passer in the game. I mean, every time he had the basketball, his goal was to find someone else to get the basketball to. It wasn't trying to go to the rim. He didn't care if it was single-teamed or double-teamed. He was constantly looking to set up other people. This Denver Nuggets team is too big for Miami right now. And this is going to be a very short series unless Eric Spoelstra can dial up something else. Because even if the Miami Heat shots fall, I think Denver can respond to anything Miami throws at them right now. Now, it's a lot to take away out of game one because we know series are not won after the first game. You definitely need an adjustment. And I'll tell you what else is a big deal. I don't know when Miami arrived in Denver, but it does take a couple of days at altitude. I know people like to think that it doesn't. It does. Altitude sickness is a thing. So they're not playing game two of that series until Sunday. This will get the Miami Heat more acclimated to the lack of oxygen up at 5,280 feet. But I don't think that was a big problem last night. I don't think that was the main issue. But I do think the fact that Miami just did not look sharp, and Denver, despite 10 days off, looked extremely sharp. I hate to say it because I think these are the two best teams that are left right now. This isn't a regular season matchup of the best team versus the worst team or something along those lines. But Denver looked 1,000 times better than Miami last night. I mean, they looked bigger, faster, more efficient. They understood the pace of the game better. I hope Miami turns it around. Yeah, it did not. It looked effortless. It was one of the more effortless outings I've seen a team make in a finals. Just it looked pure like, efficiency.
It looked like college football cupcake games.
Yeah,
that's what it looked like.
It really did, and it was late in the game. Miami cut the lead to 9, and I kept thinking, all right, maybe with his 4 minutes left to go, maybe they make a run. But then the Nuggets just shut that down immediately. They was like, that's enough. It was so. Again, it's hard to describe, but there was a largeness to the Nuggets that Miami doesn't have. And this is going to force Eric Spoelstra to make a big decision because before game six, he started Caleb Martin over Kevin Love. Martin had been coming off the bench and he put Martin in the starting lineup and he may have to make that switch back, even though Kevin Love is basically ineffective, just to get a size advantage because they looked way too small. I mean, way too small. I mean, we're not talking Jokic. We're talking Aaron Gordon. I mean, everybody on the Nuggets is bigger than what Miami was putting out there last night. And I agree with Jimmy Butler. One of the things that they've got to do is they've got to attack the rim. Look, the Miami Heat went to the free throw line twice in that game, and that was not because the officials were swallowing their whistle. And it wasn't because they weren't getting calls. They weren't attacking the rim. There was no reason to blow a whistle for a foul when there was no foul because they weren't attacking. And Jimmy Butler wasn't attacking. I mean, Jimmy Butler had 13 points in this game. I mean, you're going to need him. He was averaging 30 going into this series. You need him to score. You need everybody else to hit their shots. Now, if I'm Spoelstra, there's a couple of things I do take away from the game last night that makes me go, all right, maybe we make a few adjustments. But like I said, I think Mike Malone will answer those adjustments, because one thing that Denver was willing the Heat to do was take your outside shots and make them. If you want to take them outside shots, take them. And that's what Miami was doing. Again, they took 39 three-point attempts last night, and they made 13. But Spoelstra liked the way that they got the looks on those outside shots. So again, as a coach, sometimes you go, well, they didn't go in, but I liked what I saw. And given the ability of this team to go back and forth, I think maybe we can get more shots to fall down. And then down the road, we can see if that helps us out in this series. So Spoelstra did like the fact that Miami was getting looks on the perimeter. They just weren't knocking them down. But I don't think he has a real answer to what the Nuggets do size-wise. And again, I know it's Jokic's nature to pass. He loves to pass the basketball. He loves setting up his teammates. But he let the game come to him. And that's the thing that Miami can't afford to do. I'll take that back. They can let Jokic do that if they can shut down other guys. Jokic would get the basketball. He'd look around. All right, who's open? What is this? Are they double teaming me? What can I do with this? And he would find Bruce Brown in the corner. He'd find Murray, or he'd find Gordon, or he'd take it himself if he felt like the opportunity was to take it himself. But in the first quarter, it was almost if he was telegraphing the Miami Heat. Hey, I'm not even going to shoot, and we're still going to win this thing. I'm not even going to shoot, and we're still going to lead by 8 points, 9 points. That's how good my teammates are. That's how complete this team is. So I don't know what I was expecting last night, to be honest with you, because I was thinking I might get a good game. But then as the game was going on, I realized a couple of things. One, the Nuggets weren't rusty. Right? The Nuggets were well rested and ready to go, and they were efficient. So the rest factor was out the window. And then I thought, all right, well, it was a hard fought 7-game series with Boston. And I noticed that Miami was a little flat. So I went, all right. So a lot of times in those kind of games, it's not the definitive answer to what you may have in a series. I know there will be a lot of people that will watch last night's game and say, well, I think Denver is now going to sweep them. I don't know if they'll sweep them because, again, there's a lot of time between games. Spoelstra is a master of adjustments. But I have a hard time seeing Miami dialing up a plan that is now going to beat a Denver Nuggets team 4 times in the next 6 games. I just don't think this is going to happen. Let's be honest about the Miami Heat run. They played 3 teams, and all 3 teams were flawed in a number of ways. Milwaukee, right? Without Giannis and Mike Budenholzer making some ridiculous defensive substitutions, allowed Jimmy Butler to score that bucket to get into overtime. Boston was hot, cold, and Jason Tatum's ankle injury, where Jaylen Brown didn't step up to respond to that injury and take care of his teammates' lack of production. You can go through the Knicks series and find times where the Knicks threw up on themselves. So Miami was playing great, and the other team was contributing to their own demise. That has not happened to Denver in the entire playoffs. They have not been in a position where you wonder what's wrong with them. They have not had a series where you went, something's the matter. Something's a problem. They better fix this. They have been fantastic the entire playoffs. As I've said many times, an overtime loss in Minnesota, 2 games in Phoenix, and that is all they have dropped. So they're not getting help from Denver this series. They're not going to get help from Denver to help them win this in 4 games in the next 6. It's not happening. So they're going to have to really beat this Nuggets team. This Nuggets team is not beating themselves. That was a team on a mission. That for a franchise and all, when players get to a situation like this where there is a franchise that has not been to a finals or hasn't won a championship, whatever the case may be, man, you get inundated with the alumni from that team. You get inundated from fans who've rooted for that team for 40, 50 years, whatever it may be. All of a sudden, the ghosts come back, and you're a player, and you're like, man, I've only been here 2 years, and I'm getting phone calls from guys who played on this team in the 70s. I'm getting messages from guys who played here in the 60s, whatever it may be. Baseball players talk about it a lot. And you're talking about a Nuggets team that was feeling the urgency of, we're the number one team in the West. We've never been to the finals before. We've had this break. Everybody's saying, win one for Alex English, win one for LaFonso Ellis, win one. I mean, all the old Nugget greats. And they went out and did it. They completely efficient basketball. And so we'll see what game two brings. I'm a big fan of Eric Spoelstra. If you've listened to this show, I've been praising him all postseason, as many people around the country have. He's a brilliant strategist, and he's going to need the brilliance to come out, because that was way too easy last night for Denver. Way too easy. It looked like a complete mismatch. And if that means Kevin Love's got to get back out there for some size, I don't know what the answer is. But I do know this. Miami's going to have to shoot better. That's no question. I mean, they were cold. They were cold last night. And I really do hope that this becomes a series. I don't mind. Listen, in the end, if it's a sweep or it's a five-game series, credit the team that did that, right? I just think for the entertainment value of what this NBA wants to bring, I think to watch the Miami Heat story unfold out of the East, and then to get a team that might just drill them out of these finals, it's not the best option, obviously. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. This is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
To Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hit us up on Twitter again at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Your thoughts on the NBA Finals. If you watched it last night, game two will be on Sunday, so we got a couple of days. The Heat and Nuggets have a couple of days to process game one. A couple of thoughts here. Nikola Jokic, I know for a lot of people around the country, It's their first time seeing him, or maybe they caught some of it in the playoffs. But, I mean, I think about somebody who lives in New Hampshire or somebody who lives in Pennsylvania or somebody like that who maybe likes the Celtics or likes the Sixers or somebody else. Maybe somebody lives in Charlotte. And they're not a huge NBA fan, but, you know, the finals come around, and why not? It's nothing else to watch. This might be the first time they've really seen Jokic play. You know, they might be an East Coast person, so they're not waiting for West Coast games they don't care about. Maybe they didn't watch the Western Conference playoffs at all because they didn't care. For a lot of people, you know, if you live in L.A. or Phoenix or whatever, you've probably seen Jokic. He comes to town a lot, plays in the conference playoffs, the more important part of the postseason for you. But for a lot of people out East, it might be the first time they've seen Jokic play. And to hear a bunch of to see the way he plays and to get the sort of analysis of the way he plays, for a lot of people, they've been hearing how great he is. And he delivered a performance last night where he another triple-double and a rather easy triple-double. But I think it was really, it had to have been sort of eye-opening to somebody who hadn't seen him play how much he wants to distribute the basketball, how much he's willing to distribute the basketball. There have been a lot of great big men who can pass, but I haven't seen a center like this be able to pass the way he does.
Is he a center?
Yeah, he's.
What his classification is, but
yeah, he's 7 foot. I mean, what else is?
Yeah, he was a point guard last night.
Maybe he was a point guard last night.
No, it was a question yesterday. I posed to you, you know, in the buy or sell that we did, and it was, you know, in a losing effort. They said Jimmy Butler would win the MVP over Nikola Jokic. Mm-hmm. And you said sell, because you felt if Denver is to lose, you could see Jokic winning the MVP, finals MVP. And after last night, it's like, you know what? You're absolutely right.
Yeah, he
I think
really
he is going to
easy.
Average a triple-double in this series.
His finesse is incredible. Like, his touch is great. I mean, he knows how to butterfly that basketball into the basket. I mean, he really knows how to just kind of baby shot that thing when he's in the paint. And he does have favorable coverage. But he just continues to look around. I thought it was great that his first shot didn't come with 3 seconds. It was setting the tone. Like, this is how we're going to do this. So here's what I'm going to do. It's almost like he thought about this in his mind. Like, he could see 3 steps down the road. Like, I'm going to establish myself as a guy that's going to pass the basketball. So as soon as I get it, I'm going to be looking immediately. Where's Jamal Murray? Where's Aaron Gordon? Where's Michael Porter Jr.? Where's whoever? Whoever on the court with me, Bruce Brown, whoever. I'm going to distribute the basketball to them. And I'm not going to shoot. And so Miami is going to come in, and they're going to go to the double team every time. So they're going to try to double team me. And when they do, I'll be getting the basketball out to my shooters, and my shooters will take care of it. Then when the Heat go, well, that's not working, then I'll shoot. Then I'll start shooting. He had 24 points last night. So, and he didn't take his first shot until 3 seconds left to go in the first quarter. So he's almost teasing the Heat, like, here's my game plan. And now you're going to fix it. You're going to fix it to stop that game plan. But then my next game plan is, on any single coverage you give me, I'm going to score. And here's the funny thing. Bam Adebayo is a great defensive player. He's a really great, really great defensive player. But he's not big enough to challenge Jokic all the time. And he had a good game last night. Offensively, he had a really good game last night. But that's not what the answer is not going to be where you double team Jokic. He's too good of a passer to get the ball out. And he reads the game and his offense really well. He knows where they are. It's like when I was younger, Larry Bird did this. Larry Bird knew where you were going to be before you knew where you were going to be. And that's what made him so great. So players would say this all the time. Like, Larry would throw the ball and I was like, I better get there to it. And he knew I should be there to it. He was brilliant at that, understanding how the flow of the game went. That's where Nikola Jokic is. Now, I have a hard time seeing the Heat win this series if they don't find an answer. And the answer is can't be just Kevin Love. It can't be just starting Kevin Love to get size. He's not really that effective of a player. Him and Cody Zeller are the two answers outside of Bam Adebayo for Nikola Jokic. That's not a good situation. At least with the Lakers, they had Hachimura coming in to allow Anthony Davis to roam a little bit more free. The Heat really don't, they really don't have that. So this is going to be Spoelstra's biggest test on how he's going to figure this out. And I honestly, I don't know how he's going to figure this out. I can't see it. I do think they get a game. I don't think the Nuggets are going to sweep this thing. I think the Heat, when they get home, will get a game. But I think they got to win game two. The Nuggets don't seem to care if they lose a game or two on the road.
Yeah.
I don't think they've got to win. I think they've got to win game two. I think they've got to. I want to put this in some sort of analogy, but it's like. I don't know. You've got to hit Denver with the kind of game that shakes the Nuggets a bit, right? That shakes them up a little bit. Denver knew Phoenix was not going to shoot like that the rest of the series. When Kevin Durant and Devin Booker shot lights out in games 3 and 4, the Nuggets knew they weren't going to do that for the rest of the series. They were able to withstand that. And hold and get through that because they knew it wasn't sustainable. Those numbers were crazy. But you've got to hit Denver with a game where you do something great, but it's not extraordinary. But it makes Denver know, all right, this team can play with us. This team can beat us at when we're playing well. They still, and I don't know if Miami can draw that up in 2 days. I don't know if they can. So it just looked way too easy last night. And I think we are going to be getting a short series.
Yeah, I mean,
I really do.
We've been saying all along that, it's not going to be a sweep. It's not going to be a sweep. And if the Nuggets come out and execute the same game plan and are able to execute it effectively, I think it might be a sweep.
It, you know, it was
just
like,
looked too easy for them last night.
This is what was wild. Like, the beginning of the game, you're feeling each other out. So, you know, they're getting some buckets, you're getting some buckets. Okay, so if you usually games are like that, where it's, you know, they lead 9-7, and then you lead 10-9, and then you lead 13-9, and then they make a little run. So the Nuggets broke out of that midway through the first quarter. They broke out of that little back and forth kind of early action. And then by the end of the first quarter, they led by 9. At the end of at halftime, they led by 17. Like, you're sitting there going, okay, like, Miami is not in the same league as this team. Oh, and then they go, yeah, and by the end of the third, we're going to be up 21.
Yeah. This is the worst thing for the NBA because, I mean, the NBA, first of all, has the issue of it being Denver-Miami. You know, so it's not going to rate high because nobody really knows these teams. There's no history between these two teams. So not only you have Denver-Miami, but then if every game is a blowout, by the time 3-4 come around, you may not even be watching.
Well, what happens is that if the Nuggets blow out Miami again, and again, this was just, I mean, this was a 11-point win that was where Miami beat the Nuggets by 10 points in the fourth quarter. So this, again, was 21-point lead. You're kind of calling off the dogs a little bit. Miami got it to a 9, and then that with about 4 minutes to go, and then just couldn't close the deal. But if they blow out Miami again, Spoelstra and the Heat are going to panic. They're going to react, and they're going to have to figure out. They might pull out that one game where everything is on the table, like everything's on the floor. But that's it. That's all they're going to have. That's all the gas in the tank that they're going to have. And the Nuggets are too efficient, and they've got too many weapons. That's the other thing. There's too many weapons. Now, look, I want to make this clear. I know the numbers for Miami last night. As I was saying earlier, Spoelstra was very happy with the looks that the Miami Heat were getting on the perimeter. The shots did not go down. They were not good from the three-point line last night. Again, 13 of 39, and 6 of them came in that fourth quarter, almost lackadaisical, you know, Nuggets with players on the bench and whatnot. But you had a guy like Max Strauss, who was 0 for 9 from the three-point line, who was 0 for 10 from the floor. Caleb Martin didn't hit any three. I think he won three. You know, Butler took one, was one of two, right? They're just, the three-pointers were just not falling for Miami. Now, if they get that dialed up in game two, that could change the game. That could change the series, make it 1-1 heading to South Florida, but we'll see. All right, coming up next, one conference did exactly what people thought they were going to do, and they still got criticized anyway. We'll tell you about it next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Bob. Well, coming up, we'll talk about the conference that's still getting a little bit of criticism for something that we said that they were going to be doing this whole time. Before we do that, Dennis Bernstein's going to join us. We'll talk the NHL Finals, Stanley Cup Finals, which will be on Saturday, Game 1 out in Las Vegas, between the Golden Knights and the Florida Panthers. Florida beat Boston in the early opening round of the playoffs, a Boston team that had 135 points, setting an NHL record, and they swept the Carolina Hurricanes in four games, while the Vegas Golden Knights had a six-game series against the Dallas Stars. Dennis Bernstein joining us on a Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today to find out if we can save you hundreds on your car insurance. How are you, Dennis? I'm sorry. I was looking to hook up with Dennis Bernstein to join us to talk NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. How are you, Dennis?
Doing great, Tony. Good morning. I'm literally,
good morning.
After I chat with you, I'm literally in a car to the airport to get the media day for the Stanley Cup final, but always happy to talk Stanley Cup finals with you.
All right, for the last couple of Stanley Cup finals, we've had some heavy favorites, Tampa Bay,
yep.
Colorado. But in this one, how close are these two teams? How is this a close series?
It's a close series because there's not dominant talent on either team. Like you mentioned, Tampa had the core four. Colorado had McKinnon and McCarr. These are really, really good teams. Are these super teams? Are these teams that go down in the annals of one of the great ones in the NHL with respect to their Stanley Cup triumph? It won't be. And that's why the teams are closer. Of course, there's path to victories to both sides, Tony. So, yeah, I think this is a much more contentious, closer series. Even though, you know, Tampa and Colorado won six, I expect at least six games between these two teams.
All right, now the Panthers are, we always talk about how in the postseason, it doesn't matter if it's basketball or baseball, but hockey too, in terms of home ice advantage. But the Panthers are a very good road team in this playoffs. They're 8-1 on the road this season. But that being said, it is the Stanley Cup Finals. Do you think the home ice has a factor here?
No, I don't. And also, if you watch the way Vegas played against Dallas in Game 6, they don't care about home ice either. They
trust
the Dallas Stars. So I don't think so. I think that, and you see throughout the playoffs, you see how many road teams have won, not just the Panthers. Like, home ice advantage, it's almost a disadvantage, Tony, to be honest with you, in this playoff. It really is. I don't think that factors in. I think if these teams play their game, whether it's in Vegas or in South Florida, those teams will win that game. So I think there's really been very little impact, and especially with these two teams who have had success on the road as well.
Where's the edge in the goaltending? That's always a big factor in this postseason. It seems like both guys are playing very well, but how is the edge?
Well, you know, it's funny. One of the guys I talked to in Toronto yesterday was doing a radio hit, and he made a great point. He says, you don't need a great goaltender. You need great goaltending. And that's what both Florida and Vegas are getting. And it's two different ends of the spectrum, right, Tony? You have a guy in Bobrovsky who's making $10 million a year, who's won two Vezinas, this guy wasn't even starting game one of the playoffs against Boston. It was Alex Lyon. And Aiden Hill, who was traded in season for a fourth-round draft pick. He was a third-round draft pick overall. They're so diametrically opposed with respect to their path to get here. But they're both playing very, very well. And that might be, there's not much to separate these teams, so the better goaltender, even though it's cliche, might win their team the series. That's how close it's been. Aiden Hill has been fantastic for this guy. And you know, Tony, when you play five goaltenders in the season, usually you're in last place, not playing for the Stanley Cup, and that's how incredible the run has been with respect to the goaltending in Vegas. So not much to separate these two goaltenders the way they're playing. But again, their paths and their pedigrees are very drastically different.
Let's talk about the Panthers for a second here. How did they get here? How did a team that finished fourth in their own division, I think they were the eighth seed out of the East, how did they beat Boston, sweep Carolina? That was a team that won the President's Cup, last year? And was exited out of the playoffs early? But during the regular season, were they underplaying, or were they still the same team but not playing well? Like, how do we get to a point where this Florida team is in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Okay, the word I use is improbable. And let me give you two data points, Tony. Game 80, and this isn't even the Panthers. Game 80, the Chicago Blackhawks, the third worst team in the league, went into Pittsburgh. If Pittsburgh wins that game, Florida Panthers are out of the playoffs. They're not even in the conversation, number one. Number two, I asked one of my betting guys what the odds were before Game 5 in Boston for Florida to win the Cup. He said it was 150-1 at some books. So there you go. This is how improbable it is. Big plays by big players in big spots. That's what they did. You look at the Matthew Tkachuk, all the overtime goals to getting good goaltending. And, you know, Tony, we talk about speed and skill in this league a lot, but what do the Panthers have? They're not the fastest team, but they're physical. They have a big defense, and they're getting goaltending, and they're getting opportunistic scoring. So that's how they got here. Is it improbable? Absolutely, because you ran the litany of play. Strength of schedule? Look, the Panthers played a much, much more difficult path to get here. They beat the Boston Bruins, which was the best team ever, statistically. They beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, who had a really good team, and then beat the Carolina Hurricanes, who people thought were the best defensive team in the league. So it's been a great path. Now, the concern is, and I'm sure you'll bring this up, they've had 9 days off before tomorrow night. Is that going to be too much rust for this team? That's a concern. But it's been a great run. I just think at key points of the playoff run, they had their best players stand up and make big plays for them. Matthew Tkachuk, Barkov, and, of course, Bobrovsky, who's going to be probably one of the finalists for the Conn Smythe if they do win.
Is the depth of Vegas a factor in this series? I mean, they're not only getting goals at the top, they're getting goals down at the bottom of the depth.
Yeah, you saw in the clinching game 6 to go to the Cup Final. They had their fourth lines to score two goals. Carrier, Keegan Colasar. So, yeah, they roll four lines, and here's the beauty of it. It's such a grueling run, as you know, Tony, to get to win a Stanley Cup. It's the toughest trophy to win in all professional sports. And because they can roll four lines, they don't have their fourth. Like Edmonton had Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl playing 25 minutes a night. These guys, their forwards don't play more than 20 minutes a night. And more importantly, their defense, guys like Alex Pettoriello, really don't play more than 22 to 23 minutes a night. The one thing that Bruce Cassidy is consistent about is using his depth. He uses all six defensemen. He uses all forwards, even deep in the games, and he trusts his players. That's the thing. So that's the key. That's the biggest advantage they have, is that their depth. Look, pound for pound, Tony, Vegas has the better team, without question. Are they going to be the better team in the series? That's why they play the games, and the Panthers have been on such a great run. But, yes, good call out by you. The strength of the Vegas Golden Knights, even though they have, you know, really good talent. Jack Eichel's, you know, a great player. Marchessault's been scoring goals. William Carlson's been under the radar scoring goals. They have talent, but, yeah, their depth is their key, and that's their path to victory in this final.
Matthew Tkachuk, he's been playing fantastic, but is he where is he getting help? Who else is on the Panthers that we need to know about?
Well, Sam Bennett hits everybody that skates on the opposition, so the Vegas guys better keep their head up. Sam Reinhart's been great. Alexander Barkov is comparable to a guy I cover here in Los Angeles, Andre Kopitar, a great two-way player. He's getting offense from guys like Brandon Montour, who was traded from Buffalo a couple of seasons ago. He's getting all over the place. And they're not an explosive team, but they stay in games because of the physicality. They take penalties, right, which is something that Paul Maurice hates. But he says, look, this is my team. We take penalties, but they kill them. So I think it's the size on defense, and it's the key guys that I mentioned, the Sam Reinharts, the Barkovs. Carter Verhaeghe is another score that nobody knows about. Tony, he scored 40 goals this season, nobody knows. But he's been a key contributor as well. So you're going to see guys like Verhaeghe and Reinhart also help Tkachuk. But Tkachuk's led the way. He was great in the regular season. He, I believe, is a finalist for the MVP of the league. And he's just repeated that trick here in the playoffs so far.
I want to ask you a larger question here, especially when it came to a team like Seattle. They were just an expansion team, and they were in the playoffs, made a nice run. But here's Vegas. They're in their second finals, and they haven't been around that long. What does the NHL do to allow expansion teams to sort of get competitive almost immediately?
I don't think they allow anything, Tony. I think the key is that there's a lot of power in this league, and there's a lot of good players who might be the sixth or seventh good player. And it also helps in Vegas when it's a tax-free state and you go live in Vegas and you play hockey. That helps. So when you trade for a guy like Mark Stone, he's not walking away. He's going to sign a long-term extension. So I think that's it. I don't think that the rules favor these teams. Look, I think it's smart.
No, I mean like the process. Like when they say we're an expansion team, do they let you get some good players immediately? Like old days, expansion teams would be terrible for years.
Well,
you could be in the bottom of the basement forever.
Yeah, Tony, I think the going back to the parity, the eighth or ninth best player on the team is really a good player. And some players, when they're given the opportunity, like William Carlson, before he came to Vegas, he played in Columbus, he scored six goals. Marchessault was a third. Look, the mistakes that were made were by Florida, believe it or not, because they had Marchessault and they had Riley Smith. So sometimes guys get opportunities to get more ice time, so that's why you see some of these players emerge who have been in the league. But the seventh or eighth best player on the team is a pretty darn good player. Now, you have to surround them with talent, and Vegas has done that. Seattle's done that as well. I think that's what you find, is that these players who are quality, you know, a 20-goal scorer in Columbus could be a 35-goal scorer in Seattle and would give him more time.
That's fantastic. Dennis, always good talking to you, my friend. Enjoy your flight and enjoy media week and media days and leading up to game one, my man.
Always great talking to you, Tony.
Hey, you got it. Have a safe flight, my friend. Dennis Bernstein again joining us to talk hockey in the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. That starts on Saturday in Vegas, the Knights and the Florida Panthers. All right, we will come back again with the conference that did what we expected them to do, but everyone's wondering why they did it when everybody knew they were going to do it. We'll tell you that story. Coming up next is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Ron Culver continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks to Dennis Bernstein for joining us to talk NHL hockey, Stanley Cup Finals. Vegas and Florida, that's Let me tell you what. I mean, I don't know if South Florida is an awesome place to be in the summertime, but Vegas, it doesn't matter what time of year it is. It's always good to go to Vegas. Always fun to go to Vegas. So the people covering this series should be a fun excursion for this series to go back and forth. Little South Beach, little Vegas, South Beach, Vegas. You going to do a buy or sell between those two cities? We did Miami, Denver. Why don't we do Miami, Vegas?
Miami, Vegas?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a contest.
Which was there a CSI Miami? There was.
Yeah, there was a CSI Miami Vegas, a CSI Miami. Which one would you watch?
Was it David Caruso?
Yeah,
was that it?
I watched CSI Miami a lot.
Did you? Okay.
Just, you know, just because of, you know, the opening intro. I couldn't help get away from it.
I didn't watch CSI Miami.
You don't remember?
I didn't watch the show.
It was a big spoof that they always did because David Caruso would always pause and he'd be like, you know, it'd be something like, you know, the Alphabet Bandit got away again. And then he would put his glasses on and goes, well, that's just the start of the letter or something. I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Stupid.
He was, yeah, okay.
And then
so he always
music,
did that.
You know, the
right.
Who.
So that was always that was like a bit they did.
It's like every beginning of the show always started that way with him putting on his sunglasses, saying some cheesy line. It was fantastic.
Aren't cop shows amazing? These detective shows.
Yeah.
It started really with Miami Vice because Miami Vice, they would have these two drug cops, right, and they were driving Lamborghinis and they were in flashy suits. And you're like, how much money do you make as a narcotics cop in Miami to be driving sports cars and wearing fancy suits all the time? Unless it was coming from the undercover agency. But I always felt like CSI Miami, every time I would see a promo for it, I'm like, those guys are way too good looking and dressed really nice. They look like they're going out to a show rather than stopping crime and investigating crime. But nevertheless, let's do a Miami-Vegas thing one time. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Two massively fun cities. So as I said, teased it earlier, so there was a conference that did what everybody thought they were going to do, and yet the criticism came roaring down anyway. This is when the media goes, I know what it's going to be, and I'm ready to pounce when it does. So the SEC voted yesterday at its spring meetings that they are only going to play 8 games within the conference in the 2024 season, up until the 2024 season, including the arrival of Oklahoma and Texas. There has been a cry for the conference to go to 9 games and to sort of beef up the schedule. No more 8 games with 4 cupcakes or 8 games and maybe a rival outside the conference that's not a cupcake. For example, if you're South Carolina, you play Clemson every year. If you're Florida, you play Florida State, right? Some of these teams do play an out-of-conference game that's pretty meaty. Now, also, and I made this point, Nick Saban is not afraid to play teams outside of the conference either. I know a lot of people immediately think that Alabama is playing Chattanooga and Georgia Southern and all these other teams, but he doesn't. He's played Penn State. He's played Ohio State. He's played some teams over his time in Alabama. He's played some teams out of conference, played Texas before they joined the conference, played Texas again before they'll join the conference. He's willing to do that. Now, he is one of the proponents of a 9-game SEC schedule. But as I told you, the reason that they weren't going to do this had nothing to do with – I don't want to say nothing. Maybe there were some coaches that were like, man, I don't want to play 9 SEC games. But it had more to do with giving ESPN free SEC games. The current media deal only requires that SEC play 8 games. So 8 weekends out of the college football year, there's SEC competition. And then they have not bought a 9-game SEC schedule. So they are waiting for that media rights to be renewed or renegotiated. And that's why they did it. They don't want to give it away. So they don't want to give it to ESPN. And ESPN say when they come back for media rights negotiations, well, we got it for this price. How about this price? They want to be like, no, you're getting something brand new. How about this price? Right? That's what they're hoping that will happen on the other end. I do have to say that I wonder about the new 12-team playoff that's coming, not this year, but next year. I wonder if that is less or more incentive to bring up a 9-game schedule. Because here's your thinking, right? If you have 12 teams in a playoff and you have a committee deciding on it, it's not going to be a matter of wins and losses between no losses and one loss. It's going to be teams are going to get in this thing with two losses. Some teams will get in with three losses if they're really, really good. So let's say you are an SEC team and you want to protect getting into the playoff. If you're Greg Sankey, you want as many teams in the playoffs as you possibly can, right? So you're hoping you take 12 if you could take 12. But what they want to do is they don't want to eat each other up to a point where, you know, the best team is, you know, got three losses, or the best team in our conference has two losses and everybody else has three. They don't want that kind of attrition because they don't want everyone to look favorably on other conferences where their champions might be undefeated and with one loss and a bunch of teams with one loss or whatever. But I also know that when you're talking about guys in a room that are not doing it by a computer, that are not doing it by wins and losses alone, that are doing the eyeball tests, that are watching the game, that you know that that committee is going to be watching you and watching you play so that you can play tougher competition within your own conference to highlight the toughness of your conference. I think that's the thing that I'm wondering about the most. If you're the SEC, does 8 games showcase your conference strength? Yes. Does 9 games within the conference showcase it more? Yes. And I think that is the key to where I'm thinking their strategy is. You can make an argument that a 3-loss SEC team is going to be better than a 2-loss Pac-12 team, a 1-loss Pac-12 team sometimes, right? The domination of that conference has been so recorded that I don't think adding another game will ruin chances of getting in to a 12-team playoff. And I think I think this has more to do with media rights and more to do with not giving a product away for free when you don't have to than it has to do with anything about adding more competition or showcasing the conference or balancing the schedule or whatever it may be. Now, I know some diehard SEC fans are going to be wondering, does Georgia-Auburn, the Deep South's oldest rivalry, is that going to remain intact in a new world order of scheduling with new teams coming in? Does third Saturday in October between Alabama and Tennessee, does that still remain in a new world order of trying to make sure teams are playing everybody, right? That's going to be the big question. Can Texas and Texas A&M play a game every single year to renew that rivalry? Can Oklahoma and Texas play every year to keep that rivalry going? Right? Those are the things that you want. Part of the lore of college football is keeping those traditional rivalries alive. They matter to people. And it doesn't matter whether it's in the SEC. It can be anywhere. It can be anywhere. Michigan, Ohio State, right? Notre Dame, USC. You can look at a schedule and some of the first places your eyes gravitate towards is when those games are, right? That's sort of the nature of the sport. Part of the sport is the rivalry. What do we say? We say this more than any other place in sports, right? Because in professional sports, in the NFL, for example, we would never say that the Kansas City Chiefs could go 0-15, but they better win 2 games against the Raiders, right? We would never say that. No, you'd go, yeah, that'd be great, and it's a good rivalry, but I want to win as many games as possible. But we say this in college football all the time, that you could go 0-11, but you better beat Clemson if you're South Carolina. You better beat South Carolina if you're Clemson. You better beat Florida State if you're Florida, or you better beat Auburn if you're Alabama. Like, we say that all the time in it's sort of the way to emphasize the incredible importance of these rivalries. Would you rather win a national championship and lose to your rival on the way? Like, that's a real question to some people. It's nuts. It's of course I want to win a national championship. But what if it means that your rival has bragging rights for 364 more days? Like, you'd be like, oh, I don't know about that. Like that's the way college football, that's how it is. So you've got these games that matter, but with 14 teams, we're going to be 16 teams. That's crazy. You won't be able to do it with 8 games. You won't be able, like, Georgia won't play everybody over the period of time. They're obviously not going to play. You can't play everybody in 1 year, but what they're talking about, these rotations, Like, they're going to tell Georgia, you know, eventually you are going to play Texas. Eventually you are going to play Oklahoma. We're going to put this on a rotation. And Georgia fans could say, yeah, but we do want to play Florida and Jacksonville, right? Yes. We do want to play Auburn. Again, one of the deep, you know, the Deep South's oldest rival. You want to keep that, right? Yes. Okay, then what else? All right, so I got two now. So I'm going to be playing South Carolina and Missouri and Tennessee, right? Well, we might be getting rid of divisions. Oh, okay. Yeah, what's the point? We just take the top two teams. So that might make more sense. So if they do that, that'll be great. Divisions eliminated. That's what they said. The top two teams in the 16-team rankings will play for the SEC championship. That's huge. That'll be huge. That allows that SEC championship to be more. I mean, you're starting to see that a little bit more. That's becoming more popular as more conferences are getting rid of divisions. And you know why they're doing it? You know why they're doing it? Because they want to emphasize better teams within their conference for the playoff. Right? That's the biggest one. All right, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.